You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX webradio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Pronk Pop Show. If you've been watching the news Saturday, Sunday, and even into today, you would think that there's mass protests, demonstrations across the United States, in particular at airports. Well, that's just not the case. Now, I will say there are a few protesters at the airports, but remember, we're talking big airports in the sense of the population they serve. You know, New York City, Dallas, San Francisco, major entry to the United States. They're serving tens of millions of people. And on every day, in terms of foreign travelers, I'm not talking about domestic flights, you have several hundred thousand passengers trying to come into the United States that are not U.S. citizens. In other words, they're coming on a passport and usually a visa if it's in the United States. Now, if they're coming from Europe, they don't need a visa. Now, I'm doing this to set a story in context. And I think what we're seeing here is a deliberate tactical as well as strategic effort by the Democratic Party to embarrass, delay, obstruct, and ultimately try to impeach Donald Trump as president. And it's done by a very, very, very small group of people. You know, I remember a long time ago in the 60s, I was in Berkeley when you had a lot of rioting, protest. The school went on, and I forget how many students they have, at least 40 or 50,000, maybe 60,000. It's a huge university. And only a few students would be on the news every, if not every day, at least several times a week, because of their disruption and protesting. And you need to have that perspective because they're really playing to who? They're playing to what I call big lie media, your major television networks, primarily the local television stations, but they're affiliated with the three major networks and Fox Cable, and they want to be in the news. And that gives a rather distorted view as to what's happening. Because of the several hundred thousand passengers that were coming in, not that many were inconvenienced. Over 100, and I think the number is 173, were not allowed on flights. In other words, once President Trump had issued his executive order and their word went out, normally what airlines do is they check with the United States authorities, as well as the airlines in the United States, their headquarters, as to whether or not they can board a passenger. What they don't want to do is carry someone into the United States and then have to send them back. So you have to have a valid if you don't have a valid passport and visa, obviously you're not going to get on. And if the United States has put a pause, and that's the best way to characterize this, what the press is trying to do is to say this is a ban on Muslims coming into the United States. Excuse me. There are 53 majority Muslim nations in the world. There are about 57 that have large populations, predominantly Muslim. And most of those are Sunnis, but you also have the Shia, and they're predominantly in Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and Iraq, especially southern Iraq. And I point that out because those two religious sects of Islam have been at war with each other for hundreds of years. It's not nothing new, and that's part of the problem. The major pause was on seven countries. And I'm going to read you the list. And I want you to think, do you think what President Trump is doing is reasonable? And before you answer that, let me remind you that President Obama, for 6 months, put a ban on refugees in 2011 from Iraq. And I won't get into that history other than it was a six-month ban. I use the ban, it's basically a pause too, and he had his reasons. But of these seven nations, what's one of the recurring characteristics? First, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Somalia, Sudan, Libya, and Yemen. Yes, the religion is Islam, but in two of those countries, the overwhelming majority are Shia. The rest, they're Sunnis. The Sunnis are Arab. Iran is Persian. And Iraq, although the predominant sect is Shia, they are Arabs. So you have terror being used as a tactic primarily against other Muslims. The Sunni against the Shia and the Shia against the Sunni. They've all killed Americans, with maybe one exception. There's one I'm not sure of. Americans have been killed by either proxies or people from all of those countries. One just over the weekend that I probably will have a follow-up story next show. Donald Trump promised the American people that he would have a temporary ban or pause, whichever word you prefer, from a number, not all, but a number of countries where there's a large predominant, if you will, there's a lot of terrorist activity. People are getting killed. Terror is designed to instill fear in the general population. Now, in Syria and Iraq, that comes from what? The Islamic State. They are Sunni Arabs. They're Salafist. But fundamentally, what they are is radical Islamic terrorist jihadists. They want to first kill Shia in Iraq and in Syria and in other countries. They hate them. They consider them apostates. And that's where most of the people that have been killed, that's exactly the background. And don't fear, it's mutual. Right now, what's happening in Iraq? The Iraq army, predominantly Shia, is trying to take back Mosul. And although the fighting's still going on, about half the city, the eastern portion, it has been taken back. But the Islamic State is making a stand on the west side of Mosul. It's a bloody war, and it's very much block by block, building by building, floor by floor, room by room, and really closet by closet. And you have to clear out the rooms, the box, and a lot of people get killed on both sides. And what's happening is that it's an insurgency, so they're also going to use tunnels. They'll pop up behind you if you don't watch out. So you're having a religious sectarian war, and I remind you, what's been the bloodiest war in United States history? It's the United States Civil War, by far. Not even close. Nearly, I think, 400,000. I don't know the exact number, but I believe it's over 300,000 on both sides were killed. And keep in mind that given the state of medicine there, usually what happened is they cut off, if you were wounded, you lost an arm or a leg. If you're fortunate and didn't have an infection, you might survive. If not, you would die. So you had a lot of fatalities as well as wounded. And that was a civil war. Well, that's what you're seeing, and even, I would say, worse, because there's no quarter given. Each side will kill, if they capture you, will kill you. They might torture you to get information. I give you that background for the simple reason, I think what President Trump is doing is prudent, wise. I don't want the possibility that one of these people coming to the country is a covert, undercover jihadist. Now, let me explain. I need to give some definitions, and on some of the past shows I've given this. Jihad means struggle, and there's several types of struggles. The lesser struggle is the violent or militant struggle, and that is the military actions that the Islamic State is taking. And for that matter, the same for the Iranians and Iraqis that are Shia. Here's the danger. These jihadists believe that they have to have a caliphate ruled by a caliph under Sharia. Think of it as religious law. What that means is, and they believe this, and they want to establish an empire. It's a world. They want the entire world to be under the rule of a
caliphate.
Is this going to happen? I think not. I think the probabilities are slim and none, but that's what they believe. And they want to substitute Sharia law for the laws in other countries, including the United States. In other words, they want to replace United States Constitution and its laws with Sharia law. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if that's what they want, as far as I'm concerned, I don't welcome them. I don't want them in my country, period. And they're already in my country. Let me warn you, they are already in this country. There are people that are Muslims that is what they profess. Oh, yeah, I'm fine with having Sharia law in the United States. Well, I'm not. And neither is the overwhelming majority of the American people. I say that because there's some people that say, well, there's no religious test. Well, excuse me, if your religion is to overthrow the United States Constitution, that is a test. We don't want you, and you're not welcome here, and you're not getting in. And that's what President Trump is trying to sort out. And it's not easy because guess what? Part of their faith is they can lie to non-Muslims. So they can say, oh, no, I'm not a Muslim. Or I'm a Muslim, but I don't believe in the Sharia law. I'm not a jihadist. Now, you got to be careful with that word. That's what we're up against. Fanatics. They are religious fanatics. Just as bad as the Nationalist Socialist in Germany and the Communists in the Soviet Union and, yes, China. Yeah, you'll have one election, and if they win, that's it. These are radical. Yes, it's very radical. Islamic, that's the religion, and they're trying to get back to a purest form of it. There are several different types of Salafist, and that's what they are. But these are the militant ones. Some are peaceful, and that's part of the problem. And where does a lot of this originate? Saudi Arabia, and the group is the Wahhabis, but another name, and the name they prefer is Salafist. You need to understand what we're up against. And the problem with most American people, they have little or no knowledge or understanding, even basic understanding. And I don't profess at all to be an expert on Islam, but I've had to read enough to say, watch out, be prudent. And I'm not for mass migration from any of these countries. Oh, yes, we can on an exception basis with, I don't like the word extreme, but I call it vigorous vetting. If someone is persecuted, whether they're a Sunni or a Shia, whether they're Arab or Persian, persecuted, and they're fearing for their lives, and they don't profess to want Sharia law, and that should be the test. In other words, you need to have a lot of questions, and we supposedly do ask questions. You want to, when before you allow them to come here as a refugee, they are questioned, have to fill out an application, and are personally interviewed. Because you want to make first certain, are they truly persecuted, and what are their beliefs? And what you're dealing with in these seven countries is religious persecution. I'll be the first to say the biggest victims of this terrorism has been Muslims. But it's predominantly where? In the Middle East. In these seven countries that President Obama and past Congresses have indicated, that's where the terror is at. Iran, or the Islamic Republic of Iran, is the leading terrorist country by far. And they've killed many, many Americans. And now, if it were up to me, I would ban outright any immigration from many of these countries, with few exceptions. I don't want them here. It's very simple. Why? Because I don't want to run the risk that they kill Americans. And I'm the first one to say that risk, the probability of that risk is rather small. Right now, it's rather small. That doesn't mean in the future it could be a lot higher, a lot higher. So I applaud and thank President Trump for doing what he's doing. I think it was the prudent thing to do. Now, there's some people who will always quibble. Was this? They had to do it quickly, and I understand where Donald Trump is coming. You don't telegraph what you're doing. You do it. And yes, that means some people that will be inconvenienced. They got on the flight before the message went out. Now, supposedly, and I will take the administration at their word here, it never included people that have what's called a green card or permanent legal residence. Now, some did and were detained briefly, but subsequently let go. But some had a visa. And let me make a point here. At any time, the United States can revoke that visa. So the Immigration Customs Enforcement legally has a right to ask questions, and they do, because what is the purpose of the federal government? We always get back to this. What is the role or the function of the federal government? Well, the first, I think, and most important function is to protect the American people, the United States of America, its property, against individuals, nations, groups that wishes harm before anything else. And the president truly has the authority to do this. I think it's rather open and shut. I'm not an attorney, but I've read enough to say president has this authority. Congress has given him this authority. He's acting on it. If he weren't doing it, I would be critical. Because what's happening in Europe? See, Europe has a problem that we really don't have anywhere near the problem that they do. In almost every nation in Europe, including Russia, by the way, they're not reproducing themselves. In other words, their population without immigration is going to decline. And the population is going to get older and older because of that. And that's a problem. What they thought the solution was is what we call in the United States open borders. Let as many immigrants in. The problem they have is when the majority of these immigrants are coming from the Middle East or Northern Africa, they don't assimilate very well. They stay in a ghetto and they control the ghetto and don't allow the police in. And the problem you're up against, a lot of this activity is focused in the mosque and in schools, madrasas. And that's why you need to have penetration by intelligence services, including the police, as to what's happening there. Doesn't go very well in the United States. You need human intelligence. Cameras, surveillance, drones, that's something. But human intelligence is critical because a lot of this comes directly out of not all mosques, but some. Because these people become radicalized. They believe that jihad or war, a religious war, is the answer. Their aim is rather clear. They want to replace all laws with Sharia law. They want world domination under a caliphate. In other words, it's not only a religion, but it's a political ideology. And that's what you need to screen out. And that poses serious problems because you have people that believe in this. Large numbers of it. It varies from country to country. But in terms of the radical Islamic terrorist jihadists, they can be anywhere from 5% to 20% or higher. And then you have some that are sympathetic with it. They are not jihadist, but they will support that. They are for Sharia law. You see, we need a national conversation as to what are we going to do about this? Not all the countries that are part of the problem are on the seven-country list. Two of the obvious ones that are so-called allies of us, that might have been true in the past, I really doubt it anymore, are who? Saudi Arabia and Pakistan. Now, there are other countries you could add. Turkey is another one. That's even a tougher case because they're part of NATO, and we have military bases there that are somewhat critical. This is not an easy foreign policy problem for the simple reason if we make mistakes here, and we've been making mistakes, we can find ourselves waking up to one day, not having one or two, but multiple terrorist attacks. And what makes it even more scary is what if one of those terrorist attacks is a nuclear attack? And it's doable. That's why we have the National Security Agency. That's why we have the Central Intelligence Agency. We need intelligence as to what they're doing. And that's just the starting point. And then we need to destroy them, especially when they're planning, plotting to attack the United States or Europe or our allies. And yet Americans are protesting that a little over 100 people were delayed, detained. I'm not protesting. I'm applauding it. And the people that are protesting better wake up. You see, there is a alliance between the radical left, what I call the lying lunatic left in this country, and radical Islam. If you think about it, they're both against the United States Constitution. They would like to overthrow the government. They know they can't, but they would like to. They would like to certainly undermine President Trump, the current administration. They're very, very bitter that they lost. Really don't understand why they lost. They lost because the American people are waking up. They're saying enough. We don't believe the direction you're going into. We don't want to go willy-nilly down the road to socialism with a larger warfare and welfare state. We've had enough of that. We're going in a new direction, and you didn't win the election. And you haven't been winning dozens, really, over 1,000 elections locally as well as in the House of Representatives. representatives and in the Senate. Your views, your ideology has been rejected. And that is the progressives. They go by various names: liberals, progressives, socialists, communists. They will use a name to confuse you. Many communists, card-carrying communists, agents of the Soviet Union, they didn't identify themselves as communists. They're not that stupid. No, they're progressives. What does Hillary Clinton identify herself as? Progressive. She and President Obama were big fans, followers of Saul Alinsky, a communist organizer. They call it community organizers today, but he was a communist organizer, a communist agitator in Chicago. And he taught today's radicals, his organization as well as him, how to undermine and hopefully someday overthrow the existing government of the United States. So don't be confused with television stories trying to give you the impression that the people are rejecting Donald Trump. No, they're not. I'm applauding what he's doing. Keep it up. Increase the pace. I wouldn't make this temporary or 90 days. I would say until further notice, no immigrants will come from these countries. Now, some of you will say, well, that's rather drastic. The only exception here would be diplomatic personnel. I'm more concerned about the safety of the American people. And until the Sunnis and the Shia work out their differences, which I think will be a long time from now, they're going to kill each another for decades. There's no magic bullet here. There's no magic solution. The only mistake, and we've already making these mistakes, and we'll comment more on that on another show. I don't want the United States military, your sons and daughters, being umpires is the better word, trying to keep apart the Sunnis and the Shia, the Arabs and the Persians. That's a no-win situation. And you will be perceived really by both sides as taking sides. You're either with us or against us. Like in our Civil War, you were either for the North or the South. It was very, very difficult to say, I'm neutral. That's what we have in the Middle East. But it's even, I think, worse in that the differences are fundamentally religious, where both consider the other side as apostates, and the preferred solution, the final solution to apostates, is to kill them. And that's why you've seen over the last 3 years YouTube videos where they're killing. Usually they're putting a bullet in their head or cutting their throat or cutting their head off or burning them. And I'm talking the Islamic State as well as the Islamic Republic of Iran. And when we go in there, if any of our people are captured, God forbid, that's what's going to happen to them. That's why I don't want them in there. And the other reason is, who created these monsters? And some, you can make a case that the United States is partly responsible for the Islamic State. We were winning in the sense that anyone can win, destroying Al-Qaeda in Iraq. We'd either killed him or had him in prison, and the ones we didn't that escaped. And then President Obama, couldn't get a status of forces agreement with Iraq. I don't believe that for a minute. He wanted to bug out, and he used that as a pretext for withdrawing nearly all our troops from Iraq. Big mistake. Because 3 years later, who's back? Al-Qaeda in Iraq, but they have a new name. As of June 2014, what's their new name? The Islamic State. And over a roughly six-month period, they took back large sections of Iraq. And who was fleeing? The Shia Iraqi army was fleeing, taking off their uniforms and running or driving as fast as they can to get back to Baghdad and the South. For those that are unfamiliar with the map of the Middle East, and specifically Iraq, Western and Northern Iraq is predominantly Sunni. Southern and Central Iraq is predominantly Shia. They're all predominantly Arab, except for the Kurds that are not Arab, they're Kurdish, but they're Sunnis. And they are predominantly in northeastern Iraq. You have three major ethnic, tribal, religious groups. And they've been at each other's throats. Now, there have been periods of peace, but it's one of toleration that the great fear on all sides is that this breaks out into a civil war. I don't want that civil war to come to the United States, but it's already here. We allow immigrants from Iraq, Syria, and other countries in the Middle East. Many are Arab, many are Iranian, many are Sunni, many are Shia, and other religions, but those are the predominantly two. Now, they might and do live peaceably in the United States, but they do go to different mosques and aggregate in certain communities where it's either Sunni or Shia, Persian, Iranian, or Arab. They're already here, and it's been going on under President Bush, and it's been going on under President Obama. I don't want to do what Europe did and throw open the doors, because you need to understand something. The birth rates among Arabs and Persians are much higher than European birth rates. You need a replacement ratio of 2.1 births, you know, for a couple. In other words, they have to have at least two children. A little over two children, to replace your population, to keep it constant, maybe is a better way to look at it. When your replacement rate goes below that, what happens is your population declines. And for many European countries, it's definitely below two. It's below 1.5. And that causes serious problems, demographic problems. Your population gets older. If you're looking for the reason the welfare state is failing in those countries, it's this. The European countries and the European Union made a mistake, and I don't think they can correct it or go back. They opened the doors for immigrants from all countries, and they got a lot from Northern Africa and the Middle East, as well as from their, in the case of the United Kingdom, of their colonies. And what that means is, especially in terms of the Muslims from the Middle East, they have birth rates that are over three, typically between three and four. What that means over decades is the majority of the population, usually in about 60 years, becomes what? No longer European in terms of its origin, whatever the nation is in Europe, it becomes Islamic. And see, that's part of their strategy. In other words, use immigration to these countries, first Europe, then the United States. Once you get here, become citizens, reproduce. They have larger families. At one time, the United States had these larger families. Not uncommon at all to have three, four, five, six kids or more. Not anymore. Typically today, it's slightly under two. So you have to look at the demographics, and this needs to be discussed, because there's more than one way to win. If you take the long view, and I do take the long view, if you open the United States borders to Middle Easterners from these countries, as well as Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and several in North Africa, within 100 years, the majority no longer will be Europeans, white Europeans. It won't be. See, the United States is making a mistake, and this is why I make immigration a rather key issue. I believe in immigration, just so there's no misunderstanding if you are a new listener. And before I continue, the way you listen to this show is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, P-R-O-N-K-P-O-P-S .wordpress.com. And if you go there, under my picture of yours truly in the studio, you'll have the most recent shows, 60 to 80 shows. I usually have 4 months of shows. But under that, and this is why I pointed out, I give you a lot of my show prep. The articles, the photographs, the cartoons, the YouTube videos. Material I've looked at in terms of preparing this show. And this show, at the very top, I have a map of the Middle East. And the orange nations are where we have a so-called immigration ban. We don't have an immigration ban. We have a temporary 90-day pause. And that pause includes Libya, the Sudan, Somalia, Yemen, Iraq, Iran, and Syria. There are terrorism in all those countries. Some are failed states. Some are sworn enemies of the United States, specifically Iran. And I would say increasingly Iraq. Some we have business ties, military alliances, that are not on the ban. Remember, 46 nations that are the majority are Islam are not on the ban. Less than 15% by my math. I said ban, it's really a pause. See, I'm falling in the trap. The news, what big lie media do is they repeat the big lie over and over again. It's a ban, it's a ban, it's a ban. Well, I didn't hear a ban when President Obama banned Iraqis from coming here for 6 months. The president has the authority to do that because he's responsible as president for protecting the American people. And you don't have a right to come to the United States. And that's something I need to say. A lot of these protesters think it's their right to come here. No, it's not their right to come here. It's a privilege to come here. What's frustrating, I know this is a small group of people, well-organized, well-funded, that get a lot of attention. And what you're seeing is the Democratic Party continuing to make the mistake. They have abandoned the American people, the perception amongst the American people. And it's spreading, folks. Is the Democratic Party is more interested in illegal aliens, including refugees, from these countries than they are the American people. And the American people are saying, well, if that's truly what you think, I'm not going to vote for you. I hate to do this because I've done it too many times, but you need to get the big picture. What's going on here? The Democratic Party, over 20 years ago, this is not new, but they've continued it. They made a conscious decision that they were going to renew their voter base, and they needed to renew their voter base because what was happening? Their voters were leaving, registered Democrats were leaving the Democratic Party. The same thing was happening in the Republican Party, and initially even worse in terms of the Republican Party. I'm a good example. At one time, I was a Republican over 10 years ago. I'm not a Republican anymore. I gave up on them. I concluded that both parties were big government parties. No matter what they talk, whether they talk liberal, progressive, or socialist, or conservative, or libertarian, they're both for big government. And government spending is out of control. And neither party was up to the task of doing what the United States Constitution says they should do. They keep spending money. And they use what I call Santa Claus socialism. Vote for me and I'll give you some free stuff. That's the proposition. If you vote for me, I'll give you more free stuff. That free stuff can take many forms, but that's the essence of the bargain. And people fall for it. And when they do, they increasingly become dependent on who? The government. That's why they make the bargain. There's no such thing as free stuff. Somebody has to pay for it. It's not the government. The money is spent by the government, but where does the government get the money? From the people. They're taking money out of your pocket and giving it to someone else and making you dependent on them. But Americans were wising up and they were leaving both parties. The symptom of this is larger and larger and larger deficits where the government spends more money than it collects in revenue, tax revenue from all sources. And that trend is upwards and upwards and upwards. In the first three years of the Obama administration, it was over $1 trillion, $1.4 trillion, $1.3 trillion, $1.3 trillion. $1 trillion is $1,000 billion, where $1 billion is $1,000 million. In other words, we're talking huge money here. The U.S. economy, I don't have the current numbers off the top of my head, total final goods and services, real domestic product, gross domestic product in the United States, somewhere between 18 and 19 trillion. So we're talking some huge money here. So the first 3 years, we had massive deficits. Part of that was the stimulus package, but that's just part of it. And it continues. Today, last year, the deficit was, I think it's $587 billion. I might be off a couple of billion. Okay, that's better than the first 3 years of the Obama administration. The problem is the trend is right back up. It's going to get worse, a lot worse, before it gets better. There is zero sense of urgency to balance the budget. The Democrats, they don't care about that. All they want to do is increase taxes. Their way to solve the problem of an increasing deficit is increase taxes. And that simply kills the incentives for people to start business and expand business. That's not an answer. That just perpetuates and makes worse the problem. The problem with the Republicans, they talk a good game. They like you to think that they're conservatives or libertarians and they believe in fiscal responsibility. They just can't seem to balance the budget. Don't even make a real effort to do it. Now, they will play games and give speeches and have a group. I love it when they have a group of Republicans, and they have three or four of their leaders speak on an issue. Oh, we're going to balance the budget. They never do it. It's always 10 years out, 10 years out, 10 years out. Never happens. I gave up on both parties, and that's what's happening in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. The American people have said, enough is enough. You guys are all talk, no action. Sounds like Donald Trump, doesn't it? All talk, no action. You're fiscally irresponsible. You're opening the borders. You see, that is the great temptation. We'll solve all our problems by having open borders because, first of all, that means we won't have a declining population. Now, many of you, and I was reading, preparing this show. I always get a chuckle, but it's sort of getting aggravating. There are 11 million illegal aliens in the United States. Now, some will say 12. Ladies and gentlemen, that's one number that's wrong. I don't know how many illegal aliens are here, but I have listened to people that have talked to people that are on the front lines. They're on the U.S.-Mexican border. They're also on the U.S.-Canadian border. They're in the U.S. Border Patrol or Immigration Customs Enforcement. And their task is to apprehend people trying to break into the country. And what they say is, for every one they apprehend, at least three are not apprehended. In other words, they make it across, and where are they? They're in sanctuary cities. And before I forget, I heard a news story, and you're going to hear a lot more news stories. Donald Trump has got the attention of the sanctuary cities, the jurisdictions that don't let their local law enforcement enforce immigration law. They are aiding and abetting illegal immigration. That is a felony. And the way you get their attention is cut off their funding. And that's what Donald Trump has promised to do. And I'm waiting for that. They're going to squeal like stuck pigs. And they're already, we're going into court. We're going to win this one. Blah, 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 blah. Good. Try spending money that you don't have. See, that's got their attention. The majority of the American people want the illegal alien invasion of this country stopped. Because that invasion is first and foremost a job issue. That's who it hurts. It hurts the American worker, and it's the American worker that's upset with both parties. And they elected Donald Trump. Now, before you conclude, I'm a Trump supporter. I'm not. I'm a classical liberal. I want limited government, a lot smaller than we have now. And I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. And I'm realistic. And no, nothing fundamentally is going to change until you have a new political party that's viable, has the votes in the House, the Senate, and the presidency. And that's going to take years, probably decades to happen. And unfortunately, we don't have decades. Well, we do. We have maybe one, two at the outside. Sometime between now and 2040, there will be a day of reckoning. The party will be over. This will blow up big time. Now, before then, we probably will have a war, maybe even a depression, but ultimately it blows up. You just cannot run these massive deficits. What cannot continue will not continue. I'm paraphrasing an economist, but not very well. The word, I don't like it because it doesn't really communicate. It's unsustainable. You can't keep doing this. But they keep doing it and making it worse, worse, and worse. You can't continue having open borders. Where does that lead to? It leads to a rebellion. The American people are upset. They're mad. They're outraged. They're not going to take it anymore. And Donald Trump is just, I won't say the first, but one of many people that already have jumped on that bandwagon. The Tea Party was sort of the advance element of this. When the people supporting the Tea Party, and that includes me, we didn't want bailouts of anybody, period. That's not the way free market capitalism works. No bailouts. If you screw up, you pay the penalty. You either go out of business or your business is bought by someone else and you may or may not have a job. Don't come to government and say, please bail me out. Please, please, please bail me out. That's not how it works. But unfortunately, that's what we did. Very bad precedent. And we didn't go after the people. And there were a lot of crimes. Oh, the government got big fines for many of these financial institutions. But where did the problem start? It started with the government. Intervention into the economy. Thinking that all Americans should own a house. Very bad idea. They wanted more Americans to own a house. Well, if you're going to own a house, you better have a good paying job and you better have a fair sum of money in the bank in case you don't have a job. You can, for 6 months, a year, maybe a couple of years, pay the mortgage payment. But people that either didn't have a job, didn't have income, didn't have the assets, were given mortgages, and it blew up. Surprise, surprise. I'm not surprised. But the government was encouraging that. Democrats and Republicans led to the Great Recession. And we really haven't learned the lesson. So the American people are looking for leadership. They're looking for a new direction. They're looking for results. Not talk, not BS or rubbish. I got to clean it up. I like the British. British have a good phrase, rubbish. It's rubbish. You can say rubbish. Well, we're covered with rubbish. Think of that. I'm looking at the time. My hour is about up. I'm going to extend this a few more minutes. So the story in the news that's getting a lot of attention is the pause for 7 countries for 90 days, and one country, 120, that's Syria. That if you want to come to the United States, listen, you need to understand this. It's not easy to get a visa from these countries. There is a screening process in place. But where you have a failed state, a broken state, where you're in civil war, it's hard to check out these people. There's not reliable databases. How do you vet them? Yeah, I'm for vigorous vetting. Sounds real good, and I'm for vigorous vetting. But the information is simply not there. If you're in a civil war, what happens? Databases, local, they get destroyed. You don't know who you're dealing with. That's a challenge for the people in the Department of State that have to issue these visas. They can't vet them. It's not that they're against vigorous vetting. They can't be vetted. If they can't be vetted, what's the answer? As far as I'm concerned, you're not coming here. I hear your story. I agree with it. But I can't prove when you were born. I can't prove where you've lived. You see, I've been in the military and had security clearances and had background checks by the FBI. But it wasn't me. It's for everybody because they were concerned about security. And just a point of information, my father was in the military, and he has security clearances. So I'm one of the easy ones, but they checked me out. And that's in a country that's not under, it's not, you don't have a civil war raging. How are you going to do that in Yemen, Somalia, Iran, Iraq? Are you crazy? See, I hope Donald Trump makes it permanent. Uh-oh. Permanent? What do you mean permanent? I don't want him here. They want to kill each another? Stay home and kill each another. Now, I don't want them to kill each another, but that's what they've been doing. I'm a non-interventionist. I'm more like George Washington. We'll trade with everybody, but we're not going to get mixed up in the affairs of other countries. And I'll just tease you. There was an operation that an American soldier, Special Forces, was killed. Several were injured. And yet an American citizen was killed, an 8-year-old daughter of who, Alawaki, I always mispronounce his name, that we killed by a drone attack. We killed his son. They were both American citizens. Now, the father was causing trouble. He was a source of radicalization of a lot of people. But where does the government come off to kill people? Now, the intent was not to kill the daughter, or for that matter, the son, but when you have drone attacks, you have collateral damage. You need to review that entire, and there are two entities that are doing it, the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, and the military. And there's a certain amount of overlap. Is that what you want your government to do? That many of you will say in the audience, oh yeah, kill them all. They're all terrorists. But what are you creating when you do that? When for every one, I'm just going to use a number, for every one terrorist, bona fide terrorist that you kill, 50 or 100 innocent civilians are killed. What do you think you're creating? For every one terrorist you're killing, at least 2 or 3 more, and probably many more than that. We have to truly review and consider and think about what we're doing with drone attacks. Imagine drone attacks in the United States. Oh, we killed the criminal killer in the United States. He was an illegal alien, a criminal illegal alien, and we killed him with a drone attack. And oh, by the way, we killed his family and his neighbor. I don't think that would go over very well. Americans would be screaming at that. And whoever initiated that wouldn't be a second-term president. But we're doing that and we have been doing that more and more under Obama, much more than we did under Bush. You see, that's the problem with an American empire. We have military bases, hundreds of military bases around the world. About 35, 36 are fairly large bases, large, medium-sized bases, at least 36 all over the world. Japan, Germany, as well as in the Middle East. We have hundreds more that are small. Few people or not many people. I wouldn't consider it a base or an air station or a fort at all. But to support logistically, intelligence-wise, if you're going to project power around the world because you want to be policemen of the world and intervene in country after country, that's what it requires. And that's expensive. Very, very expensive. The United States it's the American empire. We like to say the American century for the 1900s. Today, it's the American empire. We spent about half the money spent on arms is spent by the United States because we have an American empire. There's truly no one that could challenge us, including nuclear. We are a superpower. But what's undermining that? What is our weakness? You need to know your strengths and weaknesses, our advantages and disadvantages. $20 trillion in debt, $200 trillion in unfunded liabilities. In other words, for all those Santa Claus socialism programs, we can't pay them. Ultimately, what happens, one approach to handling it is inflation. In other words, the value of your currency goes down, down, and down. So yeah, you get a benefit, but it doesn't buy very much. And that has been what the United States has been doing now for decades. The value of the dollar has gone down, down, and down. Over a 100-year period, a 1913 dollar today is worth less than 3 cents. That's called inflation. Oh, it's gradual. You hardly notice it, but that's what happens. And it'll be worse as those deficits get larger and larger. You see, there are a lot of fundamental things that could correct it, but it's not going to be easy. What I'm leading up to is we don't have the money to support an American empire anymore. And those facts of life are not being accepted by many in the military and many in the military-industrial complex. War is profitable. War is big business. War keeps a lot of people employed, both domestically, in industry, as well as in the military. You can make a strong case that war is the answer, and you could easily come up with the justification for that. It doesn't work. Because let me rephrase that. You have a choice. Do you want an American empire? And there's some out there. Yes, they do. Well, if you want one, you're not going to have your Bill of Rights. You're not going to have your liberties. You're not going to have a representative republic. You're going to have a dictatorship. You're going to have a tyrant in office. And we already have seen what tyrants do in the former President Obama, disregarding the Constitution, disregarding the law. Now, he was charming, had a smile, but he was out of control. He didn't have the power to write laws. Read the Constitution. Enforce the laws, yes, but not to make them. And that's what he was doing. What Donald Trump is doing with this temporary pause in immigration is perfectly legal. He has the authority. It's been given to him by Congress. Now, you can make the case that he doesn't, but I'll tell you, when you weigh both, and I have some articles, you can read them. One by Andrew McCarthy at National Review goes over some of the legal issues, both in terms of the law and the Constitution. I don't think it's even close. Now, people differ on this. What I think is coming is that immigration, whether it's refugees or people just trying to immigrate into this country, where you're coming from a country such as Iran, Iraq, Syria, Somalia, Sudan, Libya, and Yemen, you're not going to get in. And the majority of the American people would support that. Not only do they not want to send their own sons and daughters there to fight wars, they don't want people from those countries coming into this country and maybe starting not a war, but multiple terrorist attacks. This might be the first step down that road, and I applaud this. But who are you up against? You have the radical left in this country and radical Islam, and they're in a very much unholy alliance, and it's against the United States. That's who they're trying to undermine. And that's what they're doing. I wasn't surprised that you had demonstrations. I'd be surprised if we didn't. But you got to keep them in context. How many people were truly affected by this pause? At most, it's under 200 people. And most of the people that had visas were trying to get on a plane were stopped. They weren't inconvenienced. They were stopped. And let me say something, and this needs to be said. In fairness, if you're coming as a refugee where you are persecuted and you're leaving your country and coming and have refugee status, what would you be doing? You would be selling whatever assets you had, if you owned a house, a car, whatever, with the definite plan of leaving permanently your country. That doesn't mean you can't come back to visit, but you know your life is threatened. And there have been stories of the Islamic State warning people, get out. We want you to leave. If you don't, we're going to kill you. They give you somewhat fair warning, and the smart thing to do was to leave. You're being religiously persecuted, and you know they hate your guts. And even people that fled were gunned down. I've seen the videos. So we need to understand that people that apply and go through the process to get the visa as a refugee are screened just because of that. We need some empathy for them. But after saying all that, I'm more concerned about the American people. Because why maybe 100 are legitimate, you only need one that could come to the United States and kill many Americans. It's a balancing act. And it depends on the extent that you can actually do the vetting. And there is a good faith effort to do it, but in many, and some would say most of these cases, you can't do the vetting. So if that's the situation, you can't do the vetting, what can you do? You can shut it down for everybody. That's a hard decision to make. It's not an easy decision to make because you know, and I know, there are some people that are legitimate refugees. They are being persecuted. Many of them are Christians and other religious minorities where, under Islam, they're considered apostates, and they want them killed. And you run that serious risk if you stay of being killed. Remember, you have to earn a living. You have to go out in the community. And they know who you are, or will know who you are, and they know where you're at. And they will come to you and kill you. That's what they face. That's why they're fleeing. And my heart goes out to them. We're talking a fine balancing act. So I have zero problem with President Trump putting in a 90-day pause for travelers coming from these countries. Oh, yes, it's going to be an inconvenience, on some a hardship. And yes, they run the risk, some of them do, of being killed prior to making it out. I have no doubt that could happen. But the American people come first. And that gets me back where I started and interrupted. What's going on here? The Democratic Party saw that they were losing Democrats, as was the Republican Party. So they made a conscious decision to go after immigrants, both legal and illegal. Their assumption was that at least 2/3, if not 3/4, would become Democratic voters, especially illegal aliens coming from Mexico and Central America and the Caribbean. And they had their donor base, the owners of this country, providing them with campaign contributions. And they got those campaign contributions with the understanding that they have to be for both legal and illegal immigration. And the Democrats made that bargain. And now the American people have woken up to the fact that the Democratic Party is more concerned about illegal aliens as well as legal immigrants. And they've really forgotten about the American worker, the American citizen. And what they want to do is reward illegal activity by granting citizenship. Amnesty is citizenship. In other words, they want to reward the people that broke in the country or working here, living and working here, by giving them citizenship. Whose jobs are they taking? And they are taking the jobs of American citizens. Now, many here, illegal aliens in the past, were so-called guest workers. We still have guest workers. They pick fruit, vegetables, ranching. Many are in construction, meat packing, maids in hotels, cooks, busboys in restaurants. Hundreds of thousands, really over a million. But they're guest workers. And we've had that for many, many years, decades. But what we've had starting in 1990, it's not a new problem. Legal immigration was increased to a million. Were the American people demanding, we need a million? No. The owner-donor class wanted cheap labor. I call it compliant labor. They work hard and don't give you any lip. They don't talk back. Now, some on the left will say, you're exploiting these illegal aliens. Yep, some of that was definitely going on because the owners of these enterprises relied heavily on illegal aliens. Not legal, illegal. And many of them were so-called guest workers. But it spread to other industries, not just picking fruit, vegetables, and ranching, if you will. And what quickly happened is they were replacing American workers that were doing construction work, maintenance, gardening. Many of the jobs were entry jobs for their own American citizens during the summer and part-time during the year. And now more and more of those jobs were going to illegal aliens, as well as some legal immigrants. That did not sit well with the American people at all. And all we hear is over and over again from the Democrats, we got to get them out of the shadow. Got to get them out of the shadows. They're not in the shadows. I'm in Dallas. They're all over. They're not in the shadows anymore, folks. And the American people resent it. They're more than resent it. They're throwing Democrats out of office. The Democrats are panicking. They're in disarray. They're cracking up because their strategy has blown up in their faces. And this is just the start of it. I have news for them. This is just the start of it. Now, before I go on, the Republicans are not much better. They're not. because they get big campaign contributions from the same people, and the same people want cheap, compliant labor. The only difference I see between the two, and it's not a big difference, is that Republicans want to do this legally. We're going to increase the approximately 1 million that come here illegally to 2 million to 3 million per year. And frankly, that is the preferred route amongst the owner-donor class, the owners, the executives of large corporations. Because there are laws on the books that if you employ illegal aliens, you can go to jail and you can pay some stiff fines. But they know the law's not being enforced. And the Republicans have fell for this nonsense that, oh, you got to get at the Hispanic vote. Excuse me. Oh, you'll get some Hispanic voters. I won't deny that. If you're real good, you might get a third. And I mean real good. But going in and the wager or bet by the Democrat, we'll get at least 2/3. And depending on the candidate, the message, we could probably get 3/4. And if we do, in other words, we give citizenship to all these illegals, before you know it, we control the United States at every level, local, county, state, you name it, as well as the House, the Senate, the presidency. We'll have a lock on all of those institutions, political entities, for 50 to 100 years, as far as the eye can see. And they believe it, especially if you're in New York or California or to a certain extent Illinois. In other words, one party rule. But something that they didn't count on, they overlooked. They overlooked the American people that said, wait a minute, you're supposedly should be interested in my concerns, my interests, not people that have broken in the country from other nations, wherever, whatever nation they're coming from. I think you're not understanding something. It's we the people refers to the American people, American citizens, not citizens from Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, Cuba, the Middle East, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Vietnam, China, you name it. Excuse me. What's wrong? What's going on here? What's going on is the Democratic Party and its leadership, and to a certain extent, the Republican Party and its leadership, and I would say a large extent, have sold out the American people. They've betrayed their oath of office. They have betrayed the American people. And now the Democrats have got a taste of the backlash, the blowback. And ladies and gentlemen, it's a taste, and it will be applied to Democrats and Republicans that sell out the American people. The American people are fine with a permanent restriction on no immigration from these 7 countries, and I could add at least 7 more. They want to overthrow the United States government, its constitution, and its laws. Stay home. We don't want you. And if the politician still persists, throw the bum out. He's a bum. He doesn't care about you. And we have him in the Democrat and Republican Party. And we certainly have him big time in what I call big lie media that practice junk journalism. They dish out propaganda. They tell you half the story. Not half the sentence, half the story. What Donald Trump did, just to clue them in, is popular amongst the American people. They're applauding this, even if they're not Trump supporters. And like I said, I wish he makes this permanent. If they want to continue their religious wars, killing each other, I regret that that's what they're about. Let them stew in that mess. Stay out of it. Now, I know some of you are quickly going to say, but there's so much oil there. Yeah, there's a lot of oil. Under Saudi Arabia, Iran, in the Persian Gulf, in Iraq. And yes, it was British technology, American technology that explored, developed it. And we could help them. But the American people do not want to be the security guards for the oil companies. They are tired, war-weary, and is sick of losing their sons and daughters and sending them over there to get killed, wounded, running up spending massive amount of money on this empire and not only have nothing to show for it, the people that we do it to, they hate our guts. We're occupiers. You see, we've had many dozen, over 80 empires in human history. Guess what? None of them are around anymore. They fell. They overreached. They overextended. The most successful one has been the Roman. Some would say the United States, but not really. We're failing. Not winning, failing. We see it in the budget deficits. We see it in the national debt. We see it in the unfunded liabilities. And we see it in the deaths of American professional soldiers around the world as we intervene in country after country. It is time to not only make America first again, it's time for Americans to come home. We'll trade with any nation, but we've become worse than the ugly American. We've become the killer Americans, and we're killing innocent people by projecting our power in country after country after country. I have no doubts that there are people in these countries that want to overthrow us. That is part of their religion. They want world supremacy, domination under Sharia law. And they take the long view and they resent deeply our Western civilization. But they're divided. They're at each other's throat. And they've been at each another's throats for decades. It's rather cold, but and innocent people are going to be killed. But do you want your son and daughter over there trying to make peace? When what happens is they explode bombs near you, either under your vehicle, resulting in deaths, wounded, that then come back and are not treated well in Veterans Administration hospitals. We need to not have an American empire. We need to get back to an American republic and a representative republic under a constitution. One way we can do that, but it will take years. And none of these problems are going to be solved overnight. And I'm leading up to my next show. Tomorrow evening, about 7 o'clock, right about then, the president will announce who is going to nominate for the Supreme Court justice opening. I'll say a lot more. There are three candidates. I could live with any of the three. Most Americans, including me, we're not familiar with these people. We don't know their decisions. We don't know their judicial philosophy. But from listening and reading, I have no problems with any of them. I do have some preferences, but I'm not an attorney. I haven't had time to read all their cases, and neither does most Americans. This is it's an important decision that the results you'll see over decades. And you simply don't know how these judges, if they get the appointment, how they will decide decisions 20, 30, 40 years from now. Because why? Facts change. And when facts change, I do what most people do. They change their minds. They change their decisions. So at best, you try to narrow it down to people that have a traditional or conservative point of view in terms of the Republicans. And they've messed up. They didn't get what they thought they were going to get. So tomorrow I will go over the decision of Donald Trump, who he nominated, and what we can expect. But for most Americans, immediately and even in the next coming year, it's very little impact. The one area, though, that maybe we might have a change, and I emphasize maybe, I'm very much pro-life. And I want Roe versus Wade not to be the law of the land that allows legal abortion. Even if we had, let's say, 6 out of 9, at best, we'll get back to 5 or 4.5, 4.5. It's very much split down the middle because some are swing justices. I don't expect Roe versus Wade to be reversed until we at least have 6 out of 3. And I don't think we're going to have 6 out of 3 for at least another 5, 6 years, at least.
In other words, Donald Trump is going to have to make 2 to 3 appointments. And even then, I wouldn't be surprised if one surprised you and is pro-abortion. So it's an important decision that Donald Trump is going to make, but we're not going to know the outcome. I like the 3. I have preferences for 1 or 2 of them. Not so much for a third, but I can live with all 3 of them. They're much, much better than anything Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama could come up with. So I thank you for listening. Don't be fooled by all these media reports of mass protests around the world in the United States over Donald Trump's immigration. I consider it a hold. We're not going to allow you in until we really have had time to make sure you're who you are. Call it vigorous vetting. And unfortunately, for many of these countries, you cannot do that. It's simply you're fooling yourself if you think you can. So I applaud Donald Trump. Hope he makes many of these nations permanently ban them, not a pause, a true ban. And it's not a question of their religion, or their religion is the problem. It's that many of these people want to overthrow the United States government, its constitution, and replace it by Sharia law. It's part of their religion. They're fanatics about it, and they use terrorism. And I want to keep out of the country anyone that believes that, that holds that both ideology, religion, if that is their beliefs, stay where they are. And that's not going to be easy to do. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.